Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Race of My Life, presented by Autosport.
I qualified first in my group, second on the grid. Nelson Piquet Jr. was pole position, but I had a really good pace and I managed to stay in front of him all the way through and won the race by 3/10. That race was just a breakthrough in my career, basically.
Those are the words of ex-Jaguar, Red Bull and HRT Formula One driver Christian Kleen on the 2003 Formula Masters, which is the latest selection in our Race of My Life series. I'm your host, Alex Kalanorkas, Autosport's Grand Prix editor, and together with Autosport's Plus editor, James Newbold, I spoke with Kleen about that race at Zandvoort. We hope you enjoy this episode. What can you tell us about that race and why was it so special?
Why was it so special? I mean, the Formula 3 Marlboro Masters, if you're in junior categories, back then it was probably the biggest race that you could have entered. You have all the national Formula 3 championships coming together to one event. And if you just read the names of drivers who won that race previously, it's just phenomenal. I came there to the Formula 3 Marlboro Masters, didn't expect anything. It was my first year in Formula 3. And the plan was always, you know, first year is a learning year, second year you go for the championship. But then, you know, the beginning of the season went very well in the Euro Series already. And, you know, fighting for the top positions, had a win as well. And anyway, going to the Marlboro Masters, I didn't expect to be a front runner. And after qualifying, I qualified first in my group. So that means second on the grid. Nelson Piquet Jr. was on pole position. I had a really good start off the line, went into the lead. And Zandvoort is a track you can make the car wide. And I thought, look, I make my car as wide as possible. Nelson Piquet, he won't be able to overtake me. Also, he had a really good engine from Honda in that car. That was probably, it sounded different than all the other cars. And it felt like that in the mirrors as well. But I had a really good pace and I managed to stay in front of him all the way through. Even after the safety car, I managed to get back into my rhythm and won the race by 3/10. And I mean, that race was just a breakthrough in my career, basically.
There were a few really strong names in that entry list, just to read a couple of them. Olivier Pilar was a second-year driver, your Formula BMW rival from 2001. Timo Glock was in his second year of F3. Your teammate, Marcus Finkelhock, also had a year of F3 under his belt. And there was the British Championship leader, Jamie Green, there as well. And Ryan Briscoe, who'd been dominating the Euro Series up to that point. What were you kind of realistically expecting at that point? Because, you know, Mukka Motorsport, your team, hadn't actually entered the Masters the previous year. But when they had gone to Zandvoort in German F3, their best result had been an eighth place. So it wasn't like the team had kind of really shone there in recent years. What were you kind of expecting going in and why do you think it turned out as well as it did?
Well, going into that race, from the team point of view, let's say the number one driver was Marcus Winkelhock. He was in his second year. He had experience on that racetrack. And for me, it was, if I get a top 10 finish at that race, this would be mega. And that's how I went in. I didn't feel any pressure at all. Obviously, it was my first year. There was a lot of drivers who were in their second year already. And I just like the track a lot. Zandvoort is just a nice flowing racetrack. It suits perfectly the Formula 3 cars. You can play with the aero of the cars, and I quite liked high speed corners. And I was just immediately up to speed. And in the free practices, I thought, okay, I'm up there at the front, but maybe the others, you know, they didn't put new tires on or they're still playing. but then came qualifying and I finished first in my qualifying group. It was just amazing. Having said that, also, I think we had very good support from Mercedes as well. Mercedes was the second year in Formula 3 with their engines. And they were also working very well. And we had good support from them, also from the engineering point of view, with their experience from DTM. So it just all worked nicely together.
It's interesting you raised there about the Mercedes engines, because in the previous years, the Masters had kind of been dominated by Honda and Renault engines. And that was the very first time that a Mercedes engine won one of the Grand Slam Formula 3 races, which is interesting in itself. I wanted to ask you about the tyres, Christian, because the Kumho tyres that were produced for that event were slightly different to the regular tyres that you ran in the Euro Series. Just to give the British teams a chance to kind of be on a level playing field. But how different were they? And were the tyres something that you really got on well with?
Yes, I think that was a little bit of a benefit for the Euro Series teams. We ran with the Kumho tyres, and they weren't too different, to be honest. And we could run the same setup that we usually run. So we didn't have to go crazy different route. So I think from that point of view, from the tires wise, there was a slight advantage from the Euro Series teams. Yeah.
And you mentioned before about qualifying. Zandvoort obviously is quite a tricky track to overtake on, with so many fast corners and not too many overtaking points other really than turn one. Was that something that you had in mind going into qualifying, that so long as you could be near the front end of the grid for the race, you could kind of defend from there? So it was more about setting up a car for one lap rather than a race distance?
My strongest point was qualifying. Even the previous races, like Manicure, I had my first pole position in the Euro Series. And what I did, most of the others, they went out the beginning of the session, they ran into traffic and didn't time their peak of the tires well. Where I usually waited, I could handle my nerves very well. I usually waited 10 minutes until the first guys came in to put another set of tires on or change something on the car. And when the track was free, I went out for one flying lap and hammered that one. And I was really on it. I could really do that very well. And I did the same in Zandvoort, and it just worked out perfectly. I had a very short run. Did my time, positioned the car at the front, and that was it. I think that year, that strength that I had in me to do that one fast qualifying lap was a big benefit, because in Formula 3, the cars are very equal. If you're starting P10, you're stuck in traffic, it's very hard to overtake. Qualifying is everything. You have to position it at the front, yes.
Clearly, Zandvoort, Christian, was a track that you did get on well with, because you had pole position for both of the Euro Series races later in the year as well. So was it just a track that you particularly got on well with more than any others?
I think I got on with it very well, yes. I really liked it. As I said, it's a really fast flowing circuit. It suits perfectly a Formula 3 cars. And yes, I really liked that track. And as you mentioned, later on in the Euro Series races, I had pole twice again. Usually it helps. If you really like a track and everything goes well for you, you also perform better. I think it was a bit of a breakthrough in my career, for sure. Right after the race, Norbert Haug called me, for example, from Mercedes, because not many know, but at that year, I was not only a Red Bull junior driver, I was also a Mercedes junior driver. So the budget for my season came 50% from Red Bull, 50% from Mercedes. And obviously Helmut called me. So, you know, I noticed, okay, this race is, might have a big impact. A lot of people were watching it. Also Formula One teams usually watch how the junior is doing in that race. And to be honest, after that, the Euro Series, it was just halfway through the season. There was still a big chunk of Euro Series ahead of us, and but I won races afterwards, and I finished second in the championship. And it was a bit of a dilemma, because doing another year of Formula 3 was probably a bit risky, because I finished already second, won the Marlboro Masters. It could go, there's a high chance it could go wrong as the year after, if not everything works together as perfectly. And the other thing was Formula 3000 at that time was not the strongest championship. There was only one team, that was Arden, who won all the races. And those seats were full with another Red Bull Junior drivers, with Antonio Liuzzi. And I think it was Robert Dombrovskis the year after who went there. So it was a bit of a difficult situation for me where to go. Should I stay another year in Formula 3, Formula 3000? Or are they opening up possibilities in Formula 1, which in the end did?
Do you think you would have made it to Formula 1 without the Masters win?
I don't think so, because it brought a lot of attention to myself. You could clearly see a lot of people are watching that race from the motorsport industries. And pretty much quickly afterwards, there were talks, even with some talks with Jordan, and then obviously also with Jaguar, where I then got the test at the end of the year, yeah.
I guess from a confidence perspective as well, Christian, you know, having gone into it thinking that, oh, I don't know, you know, if I can get a top 10, a top 6, then that'd be a good result. To actually come away from it having beaten everybody, that must have been huge for you going forward in terms of self-belief to think, I can do this at the top level.
To make the difference, it's a mind game. And the mental strength is so important. So if you win such a big race, it gives you such a big confidence boost. And I felt that straight the races afterwards. I was from one race weekend to the other, a different driver out of me.
Let's move on to a couple of races that you selected didn't quite make the cut for your Race of My Life, which is always good. We like to have more discussions to talk about. And the next one up is the 2008 Le Mans 24 Hours. Now, this was after your Red Bull years in Formula 1, not quite the end of your time in Formula 1 when you came back to race for HRT. But it was, I mean, fair to say, a very dramatic race. We know it at Autosport as probably the best Le Mans ever, because our sports car guru, Gary Watkins, absolutely loves that race. And it was absolutely dramatic, won in the end by Audi with Alan McNish, Ronaldo Capello and Tom Christensen. But you were driving for Peugeot at the time. It wasn't a totally smooth race from your point of view, but yeah, I mean, again, a bit of a general question to ask you to sum up a 24-hour race, but yeah, how did it go?
Much better than expected. It was my first attempt at Le Mans, and coming from Formula 1, you know, the drivers, you think you know everything and you're the best, but then you come to Le Mans driving in the night, having a lot of different other cars on the racetrack, like slow cars, amateur drivers. There's so much going on in your head, and to be quick on that racetrack, first of all, but then also to have the race pace, because managing the traffic is a big part of Le Mans. And that's where, for example, Alan McNish or Tom Christensen, they were so good in that. I mean, we with Peugeot, we had for sure that year probably the faster car than the Audi, but the way they managed the race was just superb. So we had to drive flat out, basically, and driving flat out in Le Mans is sometimes a mistake. What I had to feel, because we were I think we were even in the lead. My teammates were Frank Montani and Ricardo Zonta. We were really quick, and then in one of my night stints, I did a very bad move on a left car. I was just too aggressive. I should have just waited another corner and nothing would have happened. But anyway, I dived in, wanted to make that move, and had a contact and stuck in the gravel for more than a lap. And we lost that lap, and basically the race win was gone. And, you know, that mistake taught me so much for the later years in endurance racing, that sometimes you just have to be calm. And coming from Formula 1, that was not something that you have in mind, because it's 1.5 hours flat out races.
Christian, we're going to come towards the end of the podcast, but I know that James wanted to throw an extra race into consideration. So James, why don't you introduce this one?
Sure thing. The other one I was researching, Christian, when I was looking back over your career, was China 2005. Your best result in Formula 1, but that's not the main reason I picked it. You finish P5. you qualified, I think it was 14th, and then you kind of make your way through the field, and the team makes a good decision with strategy that helps you, moves you up to fourth. But why I picked it was because you had the fourth fastest lap of the race, behind only Raikkonen in the McLaren, which was the fastest car of 2005, and the two Renaults of Alonso and Giancarlo Fisichella. And then there's Christian Klien and the Red Bull in fourth fastest lap. How kind of we talk about in the feeling of being in the zone in a race car, is that one of those times when, you know, you were really just on it and getting the absolute most out of yourself and the car?
Absolutely. And I think most of 2005 I really liked that car. The car was actually good. Even at the beginning of the season, we scored very good points. I also managed to out-qualify DC quite often. And I really felt in the zone with this car. And especially in China, last race of the year, I was very comfortable. I had my confidence back because I had a long stint in the car after sharing the car with Tony Liuzzi. And that race just went for me, basically. I remember there was Rubens Barrichello, who was holding up a whole pack of cars behind him. And the team did a good pit stop strategy that kept me out on the track, which was definitely the better strategy. And later on, the tires just came alive again. There was some graining on the tires where everybody struggled with, and you just had to drive through that graining. The tire came alive again. And that's where the car was just great to drive.
You only had one set of tyres for the whole race, so it was a kind of almost an anomaly looking back in Formula One's history. But yeah, it makes it all the more special, I suppose, that you were able to keep the tyres alive to get that performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I remember I did a move again also on Felipe Massa. I think he was in P5. Oh, I was on P6. Managed to overtake him, and finally was the best result of my career. And I remember, I think it was P4 and P3, I think Fisichella and Ralf Schumacher were ahead of me, and they were still in distance, so I could see them. And it was a weird feeling for me to finish a race where I could still see the cars that finished on the podium. It was a kind of a boost for me. It was a great race, a great result. And also that race secured me the race seat at Red Bull Racing the year after. It was pretty much straight after the race. Didi Matešić called me, congratulated me. And I think that was a big help for the season after.
Absolutely. Well, I always love hearing about a charging drive on a Race My Life podcast, whether that's the actual pick or just hearing them. That's always things extra special, more spectacular. Well, Christian, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's been absolutely wonderful hearing your thoughts and your memories. And thank you very much again.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Excellent. And James, thank you as well for coming on. And I'm going to take this point to urge everyone to subscribe to your section of autosport.com, autosport.com plus. It's an area I know well. It's my old job. So yes, do check out all our news, features and analysis on autosport.com and autosport.com plus, as well as motorsport.com prime. So yeah, James, thank you as well for coming on the podcast. And thank you to our producer, Martin Lee, for editing this episode, setting everything up for us. And thank you to you for listening.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.